strange days indeed. UFO News Talk Radio on 1010 CFRB Toronto and Montreal CJAD 800. We'll continue with your host, Harold Bruce Knapp.
Yeah, there are certain people. Well, I look forward to having everybody on this program, but there are certain people that I look forward to having on this program more than, yeah, more so, because some people who come to this program come bearing gifts. And Wendy Connors is certainly one of those people who comes bearing gifts. An amazing collection of audio Wendy Connors has down here, down there in her Albuquerque, New Mexico home. She is has become known as Faded Discs. She collects historical UFO audio, and every time she comes here, she brings interesting things, and tonight is no exception. Here on the line with us from Albuquerque, New Mexico, is audio archivist, UFO historian, and the honcho, the only honcho, the only person involved with Faded Discs. Here's Wendy Connors. Wendy, good evening.
Good evening, Earl. Hi, Ian. Hi, Bobby. How are you?
We're all glowing here. It's 20 degrees and in this studio, humid as hell.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was 96 degrees Fahrenheit here.
Remember, we're not talking Fred here. We're talking 20 degrees Chuck, which is, what is it, about 65, 70, something like that? Yeah.
Well, so, that's not bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Wendy Connors, what you got?
Well, I brought you some really neat stuff tonight.
Knew you would.
Matter of fact, I thought that we would go back to 1966. And I thought that I would kind of let the audience revisit the Michigan flap. UFOs were seen everywhere in Michigan in 1966 in March. And so tonight's little episode is called Don't Flick That Bic, It's Swamp Gas. So let me climb back into my Wayback Disc and travel to March 1966, Michigan. I mean, there was chaos. Michigan was attracting more UFOs than marijuana seeds at Woodstock. There were reports of UFOs landing, UFOs being spotted by police, UFOs chasing the police. Radar operators were grabbing their chests, having heart attacks. It was a cornucopious wave of ufological delight. Boy, that's a heck of a line, isn't it?
I'm sitting here not saying anything, maybe.
Well, for a little while at least. Into this fracas walks an extremely well-known astrophysicist, Dr. Joseph Allen Hynek. His trusted pipe squarely clenched between his teeth and his bristly beard absolutely oozing wisdom. By the time Dr. Hynek had finished his investigation, wisdom would be out the window, his career severely dented, and a nation passing on the big bag of gas the U.S. Air Force was trying to serve. But here's the rub, Errol. Dr. Hynek is innocent of the swamp gas media explosion of March 25th, 1966.
Mm-hmm.
Like Humphrey Bogart, having never said, "Play it again, Sam," in the movie Casablanca,
mm-hmm.
Old Doc Hynek never said the answer to the Hillsdale and Ann Arbor cases were, quote, "swamp gas," unquote.
Hmm. He didn't.
Now, from news... I'm sorry?
He didn't.
No, he didn't.
Oh.
And I'm going to prove that tonight.
Okay.
Okay. So from newscaster Frank Edwards' immortal line, here are the facts, the audience, be the judge. Now, to set up the Michigan flap scenario, this first clip is a short news interview with Frank Manor. Old Frank reported a UFO had landed on his property in Dexter, Michigan. So from March 21st, 1966, here's Frank Manor.
We're about 15 miles north of Ann Arbor at the Frank Manor Farm, and just behind me is the site where the alleged flying saucer landed last night. Mr. Manor, describe what he saw.
That thing just lit right up. And that's when we seen the sight of it. But we couldn't see the bottom. There was something there, but we couldn't see what it was.
You see the side of it. What did the side of it look like?
That's what I'm saying. It looked like a cooler or a coral rock or something on the side of it. And if it was was, maybe it was spinning, I don't know. I couldn't tell. I didn't get a, you know, that much of a look at it.
What did it do then when you got this close to it? Did it go on?
Well, then the son said, look at that horrible looking thing. And when he said that, the lights went out. And that was it. We went up on top of that knob, and the boy can run pretty fast. The time we went across quick enough there, it was way down to the other end. And the lights were on. He said, there it is, Dad. That's in parallel with that tower. See that tower? The tower over there. It was right in line with that. So then I said, I'm not going down in there. There's too much quicksand in there. There's a little lake down in there, quicksand. I said, I don't want to go down in there. So we came on back, and then your deputy came down over there. We watched them, and they were up there on top there. They had, you know, I guess they were trying to hem it in. And they came down across there and right up on top of that knob. And apparently they must have seen their lights when they got up on that knob or whatever it was. And then we were all stood there just like we are now. And it sounded just like somebody had took a high-powered rifle and shot up a canyon and it ricocheted off. Just, that's all there was to it. There was no more.
Washtenaw County Sheriff Douglas J. Harvey said he thinks there's something to the reports.
So while Frank Manor was cavorting around with his landed UFO, things were really popping at Hillsdale College. Now, a gaggle of co-eds were having more fun than the beer bust and wet T-shirt contest of the week before. What they were doing was observing an object moving around in an area behind their dormitory. Now, on the following day, the local news channels were announcing from the parapet that the United States Air Force itself was sending their top UFO investigator to get to the bottom of things.
The usually skeptical U.S. Air Force has dispatched a top scientist from Northwestern University to look into the rash of UFO sightings in Washtenaw County. Dr. H. Allen Hynek, chairman of the Dearborn Observatory at Northwestern, he's the Air Force's scientific consultant to the UFO study program. He's reportedly arrived and will be operating out of Selfridge Air Force Base near Mount Clemens. His arrival comes in the wake of still another sighting of an unidentified flying object last night. More than 80 co-eds, an assistant dean, and the county civil defense director watched a UFO hover and glow in a swampy area near Hillsdale College.
Did you notice that the newscaster trips up on Dr. J. Allen Hynek's name?
Yeah, well, it's the first time he came across it, you know.
Yeah,
and
old H. Allen Hynek.
Newscasters aren't always, unlike the guys here, but the brightest bulbs on the planet, you know? You should hear me mangling the French language.
You mean two cans short of a six-pack?
Yeah, something like that. Two cans short of a tall boy, yeah.
Well, you know, I think that this proved to be a really bad omen of things to come for the good Dr. Hynek. I really do. Because the person who really got the best look at the event behind the girls' residence hall was the civil defense director of Ann Arbor, Michigan, William Van Horn. Why a civil defense director is perambulating around the back of a girl's dormitory in the middle of the night kind of strikes me as a tad bit odd.
Well, he was defending their civil whatevers. Yeah, he's protecting them.
I would have done the same thing, you know?
Serving and protecting.
My civic duty.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, this next little clip is William Van Horn describing the event.
At the time that I first observed it, we'll say that on the right was a quite a dim orange-colored light, and to the left was quite a dim white light, and it was approximately 25 feet in between the two lights.
Michigan, 1966.
That would have been about March 21st, 22nd, somewhere around in there.
The great UFO flap of Michigan in 1966.
Oh, they were absolutely everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Just everywhere. And, I think that was one of the really big years in ufology. And as you go back through the history of ufology, there are certain years that just really stand out. Like 1958 with the Donald Kehoe's being censored on the Armstrong Circle Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Just all kinds of interesting little tidbits from history that kind of bunch up in certain years. And 1966 is one of those years.
Yeah, and most of them bunch up in a cluster hidden behind something and are forgotten about. And fortunately, we have Wendy Connors here with a lot of historical clips.
Well, I try to provide some entertainment.
Well, you certainly do that. And I know a lot of people, a lot of researchers are listening tonight because you're playing clips that have never been heard outside of your computer speakers in 50 years or 40 years, as it happens to be.
Heard very rarely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because a lot of the material, I'm very grateful to a lot of the old-timers in ufology that... collected this material and subsequently gave it to me, and what I've been trying to do is trying to put it in a semblance of some kind of an order.
Yeah. Wendy, we'll break here. We'll come back and perhaps get into some Alan Hynek when we come back.
Oh, yes.
Mm, good. Okay, we'll be back with Wendy Connors of Faded Discs, an audio archivist, a UFO audio archivist down there in Albuquerque, New Mexico. With us tonight, Wendy Connors, a UFO archivist, UFO historian, audio archivist. We're back in the midst of the UFO flap of 1966 in Michigan. Wendy.
And here we go. Dr. Hynek finally arrives on the scene in Michigan, and before he can really do any kind of an investigation, he is a media sensation. I mean, he had reporters crawling all over him. Yeah, and to some, he was a man sent to put a stop to the nonsense about flying saucers landing in the swamps of Michigan and doing their intergalactic panty raids. Now the reality...
This is, we've gone from the back of the door, the co-ed dorm, to panty raids now. This is good radio, Wendy.
Yeah, good stuff, huh? Now, the reality of the flying saucers, Errol, is accepted by everybody, but the Air Force itself, it would seem.
Mm-hmm.
It's at this point in time that old Doc Hynek put his foot in his mouth instead of his trusty old pipe.
Mm-hmm.
So let's have a listen to him trying to schmooze the media with mumbo-jumbo scientific acumen, because he hasn't done anything yet except failing to see that he's the dupe for the Air Force debunking position.
The relatively few that I've talked to so far have seen light. Basically, it's large, bright light hovering for sometimes as much as 2 hours, going brighter, getting dimmer, brighter, moving, rising a little bit, and settling down again. But very little as to any shape of a tangible object. The concentration has been on light. So what can you tell me about what you have found out thus far? The people seem to be sincere, and certainly the Air Force and Project Blue Book regard all witnesses who report these things as sincere and honest, and in general we find that they are. And I find here no indication of a hoax, but I have no notion as yet as to what this is, because this, in these situations, it's like putting parts of a jigsaw together. You have a little piece here and a piece there, and you've got to bring them together. And of course, the whole idea is to separate a fact from the interpretation of fact.
No sound bites in them days, huh?
No, sir.
For those of you who are wondering, trying to place J. Allen Hynek, he's immortalized in the film Close Encounters of the Third Kind, in the scene where the mothership lands on Devil's Tor. They keep cutting to this not tall man in a, I think it was a sort of grayish suit, gray hair, beard, glasses, and a pipe, which he keeps pulling out of his pocket and going to put into his mouth and never quite makes it. And that's J. Allen Hynek, who was highly respected in his time and highly respected by Spielberg. Hynek was a consultant on that film.
Yes, he was.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's J. Allen.
As a matter of fact, they got $10,000 for that.
Wow, that's probably the most money he ever made out of ufology.
Well, I don't know. He got his regular consulting fee, you know, from the Air Force.
Yeah.
which was kind of nice, you know, because that went on from 1948 to 1969.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was quite a chunk of change.
So Michigan was gradually turning into a national media event at that time, huh?
That's right. Yeah, everybody was seeing UFOs. And the local gossip mills were in absolute overdrive. The reporters themselves were salivating like a pack of dogs on the scent of a raccoon.
Don't they always?
Oh, yeah. And Hynek is tucked away at Selfridge Air Force Base just to give the whole scene a sense of official pomposity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, nobody was really investigating anything. Hynek was just chit-chatting with people, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And minimum wage reporters, and this is funny, were pretending to be seasoned investigative journalists.
Sounds like one or two people I know.
Yeah. Now, none of this circus worked, and the tent was going to fall. On March 25th, 1966, Dr. Hynek was to learn what it feels like when you find yourself all alone and things are quiet from a storm, when, you know, you smack yourself in the forehead and say, sheesh. Then feel like a real doofus when you realize what you've done. I really think, from a historical perspective, that's just what he did. Now, Hynek did fumble the Ann Arbor-Hillsville cases, but he never deserved to be tagged with the moniker Dr. Swamp Gas. You see, Hynek never said the phenomenon being observed was swamp gas. And here's why. Give a listen.
A flying saucer expert hired by the Air Force today dismissed reports of weird flying objects sighted throughout southern Michigan this past week. Dr. J. Allen Hynek told a news conference in Detroit this afternoon.
It would seem to me that the association of the sightings with swamps in these particular cases is more than coincidence. No group of witnesses observed any craft coming to or going away from the swamps. The glow was localized there. Deputy Fitzpatrick described the glow from beyond a rise adjacent to the swamp as visible through the trees. He stated that the lights brightened and dimmed, much as stage lights do, smoothly and slowly. The girls at Hillsdale described the identical thing. This could have been due to the release of variable quantities of marsh gas. This could have been due to the release of variable quantities of marsh gas.
What did he say?
Well, there you have it.
the variable quantities of marsh gas could have been.
Gas.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So he never said swamp gas.
He never did. And he's quoted directly in a lot of the UFO literature of claiming it was swamp gas.
Yeah. Play swamp gas, Sam.
Well, you know, there you have it, but what do you got, you know?
Well, exactly. What do you have?
Well, maybe the good Dr. Hynek was not guilty of saying swamp gas, but, you know, he was guilty of, well, not marshaling his forces.
Oh, marshaling. Oh, Wendy.
Well, you know, that really isn't the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Young Michigan Congressman Gerald Ford, who subsequently became President Ford and was the putziest president we've ever had. You get out on the golf course and go four. Oops, sorry about that. Well, anyway, he decided to get into the act because, like all politicians, he knew which side the bread was buttered on, you know? And a congressional hearing on UFOs would be a political opportunity with the folks back home.
Mm.
So here's a little clip from Gerald Ford.
The prominent congressman from Michigan thinks there should be a further investigation of the strange UFO reports. House Minority Leader Gerald Ford said this today.
The Congress should investigate the rash of reported sightings of unidentified flying objects in southern Michigan and other parts of the country. A congressional inquiry would be most worthwhile because the American people are becoming most interested and, in many instances, very alarmed by the UFO stories. I firmly believe the American people would feel much better if there was a full-blown investigation of these alleged incidents.
Congressman Gerald Ford.
So there we go.
Interesting, interesting. So we have Ford, we have Carter, we have Reagan, all talking about UFOs. And, well...
Yeah, you know, we even have Truman denying he knows anything about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing archive of audio you have, Wendy Connors.
Well, thank you.
And you're not going to go away because you're going to stick around for another half hour. You have some more interesting stuff for us tonight. Usually we get you to do a half hour, but tonight is a treat for a lot of people.
Well, thank you. In the next half hour, I thought we might do a little radio drama from way back when dealing with flying saucers.
Yeah, and there was a lot of that stuff done, wasn't there?
Yeah, there really was.
Not just War of the Worlds, but stuff that programs that actually focused on flying saucers.
That's true, or travel into outer space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Theater of the Mind.
That's right.
It's always much easier to make mind movies than it is stuff for the big screen or for the small screen. We're on our way to the... Okay. There's the bumper music, Wendy. We will pause for the latest from the newsrooms.
Okay, we'll see you on the flip-flop.
And we'll see you on the flip-flop, as you said. And Victor Vigiani is listening tonight. He asked me to ask you a couple of questions when we come back. We'll pick up on his questions and listen to some old flying saucer-related radio dramas with Wendy Connors, UFO archivist, historian, and just generally wonderful person. And she has good toys, too, good audio toys. We will be back. On the line with us is Wendy Connors of Faded Discs.
Whoa.
Faded Discs. Faded Discs.
Faded Discs.
Faded Discs. Wendy Connors is a UFO historian and UFO archivist. You have collected the most staggering number of audio clips. You also have some bookage out there, too, don't you, Wendy?
Yes, I've written a couple of books.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with my co-partner in research, Michael David Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Our latest one was Captain Edward J. Ruppelt, Summer of the Saucers, 1952. And it's more or less a biography of Ruppelt and the whole scenario from the time that he took over as the first director of Blue Book.
Mm.
And about 1953.
Fascinating book, too. I mean, just the stuff in there. It's actually mind-boggling. The stuff that you've collected, not just the audio, but all of the files and the histories, and it's just, your basement must be enormous. Or do you have a basement down there in Albuquerque?
No, we don't have basements down here.
No, I thought not.
No, we're just a big slab of concrete sitting on the sand.
On the sand, yeah.
Yeah.
No fallout shelters, so no duck and cover down there in the desert.
No,
nah.
Not really.
Mm. I wanted to drop in here, Wendy. Dave Furlot earlier on had mentioned Oberg and the Coggin gear slippage comment.
Uh-huh.
Dave emailed me. He says the Coggin gear slippage comment was Oberg's attempt to trying to explain the jump cuts by what the cameras record when they cut the image in and out. Coggin gear. Mm, a nice technical phrase, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Designed to expand everybody's understanding of it all. Something else that I wanted to just mention here, too, Wendy Connors, is that working in radio today is far removed from working in radio just a few years ago with the technology the way it is, with the web, with the internet, with the computers, the sound files. You emailed me a clip that you wanted to add to the list tonight, and just to let you know that Dean has that ready for you whenever you want it.
Okay, well, we can do it now.
We can do it now?
Okay. This is, I encourage all listeners to, if they have a request that they want to hear a person's voice that they've never heard before, or a situation or whatever, to either email you or me and you know, when I come make frequent visits and that, I'll try to bring some of the clips to fulfill those requests.
There you go. That's a good idea.
And this request came from a person who wants to remain anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
But he really wanted to know what Gordon Cooper actually said about ETs and flying saucers. So for Mr. Anonymous, this is for you from the Faded Disc Archive.
Are there people out there, Gordon?
I think so. Somewhere out in
if not in our galaxy, in the neighboring galaxies, we should find habitated planets.
As one of our most respected scientists and astronauts, you say there's somebody out there.
My personal opinion is there are, and I certainly hope not too many years go by, but what we prove without any reasonable doubt at all that there are.
One more question. You can answer yes or no. Have any of them ever been here?
I think they have and are here regularly.
Thank you.
Whoa. There you go, Mr. Anonymous.
Whoa.
That's what he actually said.
Former astronaut Gordon Cooper. I think
that, that was a quote. He was quoted from the Merv Griffin show from 1975.
Wow.
It's been quite a while ago.
Yeah, that sounds almost as old as some of the really old stuff you've been playing. And Wendy's email address, if you have a request and you think that Wendy might have the audio clip, is Faded Discs. That's two D's in the middle, fadeddiscs@comcast.net.
Yeah.
Wendy.
And send me the word, and I'll try my best to pull out some really obscure stuff for you if that's what you want.
I think people want that.
Because that's the purpose behind all of the recording, is kind of a clearinghouse for researchers when they need a clip or whatever. They can contact me, and we can make arrangements to get whatever they need to them.
Oh, so it's not just entertaining people on the radio, Wendy Connors.
Oh, no. Mm. No, not at all. This is a very, I take a kind of a funny, flippant attitude on the radio with this stuff because I want people to have fun with it.
Yeah.
But a lot of this stuff is extremely serious, and so I'm real serious in private, and when I get on the radio, I really want to do a little bit of entertaining, but also to give the audience a good look back so they can really hear what was actually said.
Yeah.
And that, and have fun doing it.
Yes. And talking about looking back.
Oh, yes. You know, when I was very small growing up in Iowa, knee-high to a toad, the flying discs hadn't arrived yet. And in the evenings, my mom would put me in my jammies, and we had this big plastic bowl, and she'd fill it with popcorn, and we'd turn out all the lights and turn on the radio, and it was one of those big old cabinet radios, and the big glow from the dial was all we had, and we'd sit there and listen in rapt attention to old radio dramas. And in UFOs, dealing with UFOs, there was a lot of radio dramas back in 52 and 53 that dealt with that. And this first little clip is from a program called 2000 Plus, and it's dealing with flying saucers, and it was a 30-minute program, which I've edited down to about 5 minutes. And basically what it was a scientist, a couple of scientists and that had invaded the Earth and assumed these high positions, and they were going to take over the Earth. But I removed all of that stuff for a specific reason. We can talk about that when we come back. So here's the clip from 2001 called The Flying Saucers.
Today, a story entitled The Flying Saucers. It is the year 2000 plus 12. A blazing New Mexico sun shines down upon a great military installation, upon a vast, noisy field, and upon a silvery shape which seems to strain forward, ready to leap up into space. In an executive office, a man sits in his chair, his eyes on the great rocket. Behind him, a girl waits for him to speak.
I'm ready, Dr. Bronson.
Get this on tape as well as in shorthand. It's for the permanent files in Washington. It's got to go out in the next jet. Heading, top secret. Two, National Scientific Council. Copies to Joint Chiefs of Staff, Secretary of Defense, the President. From Andrew Bronson. Forget the usual string of titles, Eileen. Chief Department of Extraterrestrial Research, White Sands, New Mexico. Regarding defense measures against aerial visitors listed in file AA-286 as flying saucers. One, for the past 3 months, this secret experimental installation has been visited by flying saucers. First appearance coincided with the launching of our secret flying missile, Zeus. Details in reports CB-286, A, B, and C. 2. Although the flying saucers have never landed, the frequency of their visits has tripled since the launching. As reported in the files cited, Zeus has not yet returned. 3. In view of the importance to national security of this secret installation and its experiments, the reports already mentioned were reviewed by JCS and the National Scientific Council. It was decided that the flying saucers were a potential menace and that countermeasures be undertaken. 4. Zeus 2, an improved model of our secret flying missile, has been completed and armed. It is equipped with mass attraction and proximity fuse devices. Warhead contains 5,000 pounds hexenite. Firing control automatic. See file CB-344. 5. The station has been placed in condition alert. Next visit from the flying saucers is expected momentarily. In view of the foregoing, we are in complete readiness. We will attack. Repeat. We will attack.
Radar control to Dr. Bronson.
Bronson here. What is it?
Flying saucer detected and registered. Computation center fed data. Data follows. Distance, 486 miles. Height, 50.2 miles. Speed, 5 miles per second. Estimated time of arrival at contact point, 1 minute, 58 seconds from now.
Over and off. Yes. What is it?
McDonald thought you'd like to hear this, sir. This is Al Waters, a rancher from upstate. He flew down from his ranch this morning and reported to the state police. They sent it to us.
The saucer?
Yes, sir.
Where is it, Mr. Waters? The wreck.
Wreck? I didn't see no wreck, Doc.
What did you see?
I seen a flying saucer come down about half a mile from my ranch house. Saw it this morning when I was going after lost calf.
Now, Mr. Waters, let's get to your ranch.
Sure is big, ain't she?
Yes, must be over 300 feet in diameter.
Look at that. Sure looks complicated, don't it?
This must be the control room. I can't wait to inspect.
Ain't that another door over there?
A larger room. This must be the crew's quarter. There's no one here. Let's... What's that? Let's get it for a second. I'll take a look through. Irene. Irene, wake up. Wake up. Unconscious. Eileen? Still unconscious. How did she get here?
Now that's entertainment.
Is that entertainment or what?
What year?
Here we have the Roswell crash, alien abduction.
Yeah. What year was that?
This was 1952.
Oh, good grief.
And, you know, I really think the nice thing about it was that the writers of the old radio dramas really did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Because they incorporated things that they heard that were actually going on in the field of ufology.
Mm-hmm.
For example, it was very plain. They were talking about William Brazel and the Roswell crash.
Uh-huh.
And the Air Force taking the subject seriously at the beginning.
Mm.
You know, so a lot of good stuff goes in those radio dramas.
Yeah, I like the flying saucer with the wooden floors and the sliding screen door.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
It's very cool. The screen doors still sound the same in 2003, just like they used to in 1952. We'll come back with more of Faded Discs, Wendy Connors, from the Wendy Connors collection of UFO audio. I had an email from Victor Vigiani down there in Canberra, Australia, listening in. Good afternoon, Victor. Good to have you along. Wendy, do you have military personnel audio describing official UFO involvement at all stashed away on one of your shelves?
I sure do.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay, so question number two, could an archive of those kinds of quotes be assembled as a database for presentation to media and elected officials?
I am working on it right now. As a matter of fact, I have 118 sound bites taken from recordings so far. And what I do is I try to break each recording down into sound bites if somebody's talking on a particular topic and that. And I segregate those out from the whole program. So I archive the whole program, and then I break the whole program down into little sound bites.
Victor will be happy to hear that, because he's working on a project also. His disclosure, his own version of the disclosure project. So I guess you two are going to be communicating by email very shortly.
Oh, it will be a pleasure.
And
it will be a pleasure.
Yes, and Victor wrote to SDI at virtuallystrange.net, which will bring your email up on this screen if you have something that you would like to say. Last clip, Wendy.
Okay, this last clip is also a radio drama, and this one is actually British-Australian production. It's called Medical File, which was a docudrama, which was based on actual medical incidents and the information taken from the file. So it was called Medical File, and this episode was called UFO. And this one is also from 1952. And what's significant about this clip was, or this drama, was that it was the first time that in radio that they were using the term unidentified flying object rather than flying saucers. And secondly, this was a radio drama that dealt specifically with a hoax and that. So anyway, from 1952, this is called Medical File, UFO. It's an Australian-British production.
It was 8:25 p.m., Thursday, September the 4th. It had been a long day. Patients at my consulting rooms all morning, a hurried lunch, hospital rounds for most of the afternoon. At 5 p.m., I had met my wife and seen an early movie. And 8:25 p.m., we were driving home. Along the North Road is where we noticed the strange blue light about 100 yards from the highway through a row of trees. And what I saw next made me slow the car to a sudden halt.
Tom, what did you think you saw?
Looked like a man running away from that light.
Well, the light's gone, look.
Yet I'm sure I saw someone. I'd really better go and take a look. This is it. Whoever he is, he's unconscious.
Not dead?
No, there's a heartbeat. Pulse is rapid. Here, see if you can give me a hand with him.
Yes.
Get him back to the car. p.m. We carried the unconscious man to the car and attempted to revive him. When this proved unsuccessful, I drove the rest of the way home, arriving there 10 minutes later. 8:55 p.m., I gave the patient morphia and removed him to the surgery attached to my home. During this time, he muttered continuously about the thing that hovered over his head and about the blue fire that had burned him. It was not until I examined him under the strong light in my surgery that I saw the burn marks clearly visible on his arms and face.
Where am I? What happened to me?
Just relax, Mr. Derrickson. You're in my surgery. I'm a doctor. Now, if you'll just lie back and relax, my wife's making a cup of tea. Well, Derrickson, you'd better report this. I have to admit I saw the blue light myself. My wife did too. I don't know.
Don't worry. I'll report it. The sooner the better. I've got my own ideas about what that was tonight.
Yes. I think we'd better call the police.
Oh, well, Doctor. No need for you to stay up any longer, sir. It's been a long night.
Certainly has, Sergeant. What about Mr. Derrickson?
He's gone to the station with the inspector to make a statement. And I understand there'll be someone down from the Air Force investigating unit first thing in the morning.
Air Force?
Well, they've got a special intelligence section that reports on unidentified flying objects. They'll certainly want to talk to you sometime tomorrow, Doctor.
You mean you're taking this quite seriously, this story?
What else can we do, sir? You saw the blue flame and the white flare afterwards yourself.
Well, surely there must be some reasonable explanation.
Yeah, I wish there was. There'll be the devil to pay tomorrow with reporters and the like all over the town. We'll see what the Air Force think about it in the morning.
Well, Doctor, I came to say goodbye and to do some explaining.
Well, one thing I'd like to thank you for, Jacobs. You made it clear to the newspapers that Paula and I were innocent witnesses.
It happened as we thought it could have happened. He climbed the trees and broke off enough branches to make it effective.
Mm-hmm.
Then he put a plastic blue cover over his flashlight and waited for a car.
And we came along.
He must have seen you slow down, so he lit the sudden flare you saw.
What was it?
Magnesium. A long strip that burnt the grass as well.
Yes, and singed his arms and face.
Oh, no. No, he'd done that a short time before with matches. He simply singed the skin and made sure he'd have burns to back up his story.
Heavens.
When the magnesium was flaring and you'd stopped the car, he started to run, tripped himself, faked his unconsciousness, and then staged his act back here at your house.
Well, are we... You mean he confessed to all this?
He confessed, all right. You know, he got quite proud of his story. Once he saw that his original purpose had been defeated, and he wasn't going to make any money out of it, he was eager to tell us how clever he'd been.
Mm. But what made him confess?
After I found out about that press agent and the magazine deal, I started to do some real probing.
Mm-hmm.
He was supposed to have a fine army record. Well, I checked on that. He was discharged from the army dishonorably, found AWL and wearing an officer's uniform. Needless to say, he was actually a private.
Yes. The kind who had to be bigger than he was, eh? Yes, I've met a few. And, sir, you've disproved another flying saucer story, eh, Jacobs?
I know what you're thinking. But don't believe they're all engineered by frauds, Doctor. Once in a while, you know, we really get one we can't explain.
Wendy Connors said thank you, scoping another 30-minute 1952 radio drama into 5 minutes. We've run out of time, Wendy. I want to thank you whole bunches for the last hour.
You are very welcome. It's always a pleasure. And good night, everyone.
And good night, Wendy Connors. Thank you. When we come back...
Strange days indeed. UFO News Talk Radio.